Welcome to Raising Confident Kids with SEM, the podcast for parents that want to better understand more about how their child ticks, ease their frustration, and experience a calmer day today. Hello, and welcome to today's episode. Today we are talking about, what do you do if your child's school or nursery have flagged a concern about their development? What are the next steps that you can take? And the sorts of concerns that, you know, clients regularly talk to me about that have come from the school or from the nursery are things like their child struggling to sit down at mealtimes and eat their lunch, or they're struggling to join in with group activities. They're getting up and walking away from the group, or they are reluctant to come and join the group in the first place. They're avoiding writing activities. Maybe they're finding it difficult to make friends or to engage with other children at playtime. Maybe their talking is delayed and they're not speaking as we might expect for their age. All sorts of things will come up in these conversations with the school. And our natural response in these moments is just that absolute heart-sinking feeling. I don't know why that is our immediate emotional response, but it often is our emotional response. Our heart sinks. We love our kids so, so, so much. We want the absolute best for them. We want them to be happy, and we want things to be going as well for them at school and their education as possible. And so when we get some feedback that lets us know that things are not going well, even if that's just in one area of their development, you know, that immediately gives us that sense of kind of like, oh, this isn't what I was expecting, or maybe actually, this does align with something that you've been thinking and feeling yourself, but having a professional reinforce that kind of elicits this emotional response. And firstly, I want to reassure you by saying I have 100% been there and had those conversations at the school gate that you hope nobody else can overhear, because you feel a little bit on the spot in those moments and not totally sure how to respond. We know that with the latest government statistics, almost 1 in 5 children in schools have special educational needs. So you're definitely not on your own, but you're also not on your own if somebody chatting to you about something your child is finding difficult really hits you in the feels. And I think sometimes we can be a little defensive about that because we immediately go into that protective mode where we want to defend our child or stick up for our child. And that can emotionally be difficult. I think partly because it can bring up our own fears. So something the school's telling us might align with a concern or an observation we've already had about the child ourselves, but we might be kind of hoping that that's not the case and kind of just doing a little bit of like, oh, we'll see how this pans out and that sort of thing. So sometimes it can reaffirm something and that sort of hits on a fear that you already have. But it's important to, you know, obviously in that moment, you don't need to jump straight into next steps. But if this has happened for you recently, this episode is going to be great to kind of think through what could you do next? And what could I do if my child isn't getting the support they need at school or isn't making friends? How can I work with the school to sort that out? And it's important not to jump to kind of worst case scenarioing or to be kind of turn it in on yourself and be critical of your own parenting. This happens much more often than you might think. And so don't be put off by that. But let's think about who can we speak to about this. You know, one of the pitfalls is that parents will obviously feel that sense of responsibility and ownership of their child's development. And so sometimes we think that we should be able to handle this on our own and we should be able to know what to do. But actually, we don't need to be in this on our own. We don't need to be searching online endlessly to try and find a solution that might work. We don't need to be buying all of the different resources that might support our child in this. We essentially don't need to chuck spaghetti at the wall to see what sticks. And that's one of the things that can happen is parents can kind of go into overdrive and go, oh, okay, the teacher's flagged up that my child's having a difficulty with writing. I am going to do all the things. There's a couple of reasons that this doesn't necessarily work out well. One is that you can land up putting a lot of resource, whether that's time, energy, money, into things that might or might not work. So it can be a little bit hit and miss. But also when you go into overdrive, that creates an unintended pressure. So pressure on you as the parent to kind of like, right, I've got to address this. I've got to get my child making some good progress. And inadvertently, we can put some pressure on our child in that sense. Or alternatively, sometimes the opposite will happen, where a parent can kind of go into analysis paralysis, where they start to investigate lots of different options or start to unpick what the cause of the difficulty might be. So, you know, where is this difficulty coming from? Is there a history of autism in the family? And we can start to kind of go down that rabbit hole and start to unpick that a little bit. Or we start to read up a lot about diagnostic criteria for ADHD, or read different articles on what dyslexia looks like. Those things in themselves aren't harmful, but what can happen is we spend so much time kind of researching and finding out and having conversations that we can be kind of going around in circles and effectively not doing anything at all, because we're too busy, as I said, stuck in that analysis paralysis. I've also seen, this is a really natural response, where parents will look for reassurance from other people. So they might have a concern, the school might have a concern, and we will essentially chat to lots of friends and family members to get their take on it. And naturally, the people who care about us will seek to reassure us. And so what can happen is that when you're having that conversation with a friend or with your mom or whoever it is that you've chosen to chat to about this, they can say lots of reassuring things like, oh, don't worry about it, it's a phase, it'll work itself out. Or I've heard lots of bits and pieces like, boys talk later, or, you know, my child didn't talk till he was 8 and now he's absolutely fine. You know, all of those sorts of things are the things that people say to try and offer reassurance. And that is really well meant. And a lot of the stories that they're sharing with you are absolutely going to be based in truth. But it can stop us from getting started, and it can kind of hold us back from being proactive and helping our child with the things that they really need help with. So let's think about, what can we do to help our children if we're in this situation? The first thing is that we really need the right strategy for your child in that moment. We need to understand what is the need and what are the things we can do to put our child on the right pathway to make some progress. And I don't think that's something that you need to do on your own. You don't need to have all of the answers to those questions, but that is what needs to happen. We need to have the right window of time to implement whatever that support might be. Sometimes that's thinking about, okay, are we going to wait a couple of weeks till the beginning of a term where we know we've got a good run of time, where we can really try out some strategies and see what works for our child. We can commit to it and be consistent in doing that. It doesn't have to be something that's, you know, a lot of the strategies for supporting are not going to be things that are hugely time consuming. Often, the strategies that work best for supporting our children's development are things that happen little and often. But we need to identify when is a good time to implement those strategies, whether that's in the home environment or when your child's in school. You've got to be invested in it. So, you know, it's a bit like, you know, don't start a diet if you're not really feeling like you're committed to it or you're not in the mood. You've got to be in that right headspace where you're feeling like, okay, I'm ready to take some action. I'm ready to take the next step. And I also think that you need somebody to support you along that process. That could be somebody from the school, if you have a good relationship with the school and they are knowledgeable and experienced in supporting children who have a similar need to the one that they're flagging up as something they're concerned about at the moment. You need that person to help you to pinpoint what the need is, to sense check the plan going forward and think about the practicalities of that. So when's going to be a good time for this? Who are the right people to involve in that? And narrow down your options to the ones that are likely to be most effective. The other thing that's important about having somebody alongside you to support you is that inevitably, whenever we're trying to do something new or different for our child, we'll hit a stumbling block along the way. And when there's somebody supporting you, you are much more likely to be able to navigate that stumbling block, to see it coming before it happens, or to be able to pick things back up afterwards, dust yourself down, and have another go. There's a lot to be said by having that person alongside you. Now, for many parents that I've worked with over the years, that will be somebody from the school. For other parents, that might be an independent professional. So somebody working independently like I'm doing now, could be an independent speech and language therapist, occupational therapist. It could be a pediatrician. You know, it could be somebody who is supporting you from the independent sector. It could be another parent who's had similar experiences and is supporting you, not necessarily with identifying what the right things are for your child, but giving you that emotional support and helping you to navigate through the options, helping you to make decisions. When I have needed support for my daughters, despite all of my professional experience, I have found when I've been emotionally attached to it, I found it more difficult to consider my options and make a choice. And therefore, I'm more likely to get stuck in that analysis paralysis than I would when I'm in my professional role. So having somebody to talk it through with has been really important for me so that I can sense check the different options that are out there and think about what might practically work for my daughter. So having somebody to chat that through with can be important, and another parent of a child with SEN can be a great option for that. So really think about having somebody support you, somebody who is in your corner, in your child's corner, who wants the best for you both. I think that's something that can be really helpful. Another thing to think about is keeping a log of what's happening, because when your child is experiencing some developmental struggles, you will land up having conversations at different points with different people about it. And we can lose track of the detail of what's happening. Now, you don't need to keep copious notes, but it's worth jotting down if you notice, okay, I can see my child particularly struggled when we went out on a day trip. Let me jot that down. That might be a potential trigger or something I want to make notes of. Or I noticed that my child talks less when there's lots of people around. Jot those little things down. Also jot down things that have worked well for you. After we read that particular story, my child was feeling better about using the toilet or going into school. They seem to respond to using stories well. Okay, let me make a little note of that. Also jot down those moments of success. I talk to parents about this a lot. Keep a running record, even if it's in the notes on your phone, of those little moments where your child does something that you're proud of that shows that they have a new skill. Because what can happen when you are concerned about your child's development is we can start to become really focused on the things we're concerned at, and we can miss all of the gold. We can miss all of those beautiful moments where our child is showing us their skills, their talents, their interests, and is sharing with you those things. So do keep a note of those. They will encourage you on dark days, but they will also help you to see how much progress your child is making, because we tend to, as parents, always be looking at the next step, the next thing we need to work on. And that can mean that we lose sight of the really great things that have been happening. So when you are looking for somebody to support you on your journey of kind of navigating how to support your child, you want it to be somebody who has some experience, whether that's personal experience with their own child or a professional who has some experience. They're going to motivate you to keep going. They're going to hold you accountable. If you said you were going to reach out and make a phone call to a particular service, or you were going to try out a particular thing at home, they're going to check in and go, oh, how are you getting on with that? And that's going to keep you a little bit accountable, but it's also going to give you that soft place to land and somebody who's going to emotionally hold a safe space for you to talk about the things that you're worried about. And having that support in place is going to help you to move things forward smoothly and with a little bit more pace than if you were doing it by yourself. Now, I know some of you are going to be saying, that's great, Sarah, but when I did reach out for support, services were saying to me, we need to take a bit of a wait and see approach. We need to, sometimes called watch and wait. So we're going to watch how your child gets on for a little while, and then we're going to check back in to see if they are really needing support at this time or not. And so this is a bit of a soapbox moment for me, but I really want to debunk this kind of wait and see myth, because I think when parents hear from a professional, let's wait and see, or let's watch and wait, that can be a little bit, I guess, misleading is the word that I'm looking for, because it can give the impression that there isn't anything to be concerned about. Your child's getting on absolutely fine. And in my experience, that isn't always the case. So I feel sometimes when that watch and wait advice is given, parents walk away thinking, phew, actually, everything's fine. I don't need to worry about this. And they move on and they maybe don't even go to that follow-up appointment during that watch and wait period because they're feeling like it isn't some, you know, this isn't a big deal. But actually, that's usually not where the professional is coming from. They can be saying, we're going to watch and wait for a couple of different reasons. The first reason can be that the age ranges for typical development or what's sometimes referred to as developmental norms can be really huge. So if we take a practical example like children learning to walk, the typical age at which that happens can be anywhere between 9 months and at the sort of outside edge, 18 months. That's a huge range. And so actually, one of my daughters didn't walk until she was nearly 16 months old. And I was really concerned about that. And people were saying watch and wait. And that wasn't bad advice. She did walk. But it did make me feel like I didn't know what the practical things were that I could do in the meantime to help her. You know, obviously, she was on the later side of walking. And I felt like there's got to be things that I could be doing in the meantime to help. So sometimes what they're saying is, okay, we're still within an age range where we're going to keep an eye on this. So that can be one of the reasons that they're saying to watch and wait. The other reason can be that if you are accessing state-funded services, so things like NHS services or local authority services, they are largely funded for supporting children who have long-term or persistent difficulties, difficulties that have not resolved in a short to medium term period of time. So that can mean that at the time that you're first flagging a concern to them, you're not essentially meeting the threshold for the support from that service. It doesn't mean that your child isn't experiencing delays. It doesn't mean that your child doesn't need support. What it means is you are contacting that particular service at a time where you don't meet their particular threshold. And because there has been such a demand on services over recent years, there are long waiting lists, for example, for things like assessment or for access to therapies and those sorts of things. Because those waiting lists are so long, the thresholds are quite high. So they really are seeing children with the most complex, significant, long-term difficulties. And so that wait and see advice is saying a referral at this time is not appropriate for this particular service because of that threshold. It doesn't mean there aren't things that can be done to support your child. It just means that service is not in a position to support your child right now. So watch and wait doesn't mean there isn't anything that we can do right now. Children develop at their own rate, but there are always things that we can do to give that development a boost in the here and now. We can build skills today for tomorrow, for next week, for next month, all of those sorts of things. And so for that reason, I don't feel that wait and see is the best advice. There's three reasons I think this. The first is the sooner we can provide support, the quicker the boost happens. It's often more successful. And we know that early intervention is really underpinned by research as the best way to go. It's the most effective type of support. So the earlier we can get in there, the more likely we are to be successful. The second reason is that the strategies that we use to support younger children are often easier to build into everyday life. So they can be done with things like tweaks to routine, little and often activities that often only last 5 to 10 minutes. And so they feel much more natural and just part of our everyday life. Whereas later on, it can be more difficult to implement strategies because the difficulty has become long-term and persistent. So that developmental need has become something longer term. And so therefore, we're having to take bigger actions in order to support the child with that. And we might land up needing more specialist support for longer. The third reason is that if we're offering support when the gap between where your child is at and what's typical for their developmental stage and age, then the gap is narrower and we're more likely to be able to take steps to close that gap. The bigger the gap gets, so the further away your child's development becomes from what's typical for other children of their age, the more work we have to build, put in to try and narrow that gap. So for those three reasons, I feel like the sooner we can support a child, the better. It doesn't need to be heavy-handed, over-the-top stuff. As I said, it can be small little tweaks to routines, changing the way we word things, setting things up slightly differently, or doing little and often activities that will boost and support your child's development. Now, I appreciate if you're having doors closed in your face where you're reaching out to services, perhaps state-funded services or services, things that schools might provide, and you're being told, no, at the moment, your child doesn't meet the criteria for our service. This can leave you a little bit high and dry. And sometimes parents worry about engaging independent professionals to support them, possibly because of things like cost. And I totally understand that. You know, we're in a cost of living crisis. You want to be prudent about where you're spending your money. But sometimes if we're actually engaging somebody earlier on in the process, it can mean that we need less sessions overall. So because the gap is not too wide, because we're at the stage where a child is still young and we can implement strategies into their everyday life, it can mean that we need less support in the short term. But if accessing independent services is not open to you at the moment, that's just not something that your family budget is going to stretch to, this is where persistence is key. Go back to the GP, go back to the school, go back to the health visitor, whoever it is that you're reaching out to, go back to the speech and language service, and keep the child, your child, at the front of their minds so that you are letting them know, I am still concerned about this. I do think that my child needs to be seen. It is unfortunate, but it is true that those parents who are persistent are more likely to have the service reach out and say, okay, let's have another look at that. You're obviously still concerned about it. And so it is worth going back and checking in on that again. You, as your child's parent, are their most powerful supporter. You know your child the best. You are the expert in your child. A lot of us who work in SEN will refer to ourselves as being specialists or experts. I use that language, and I do understand why that absolutely should be challenged and can be a little bit clunky, because you are the expert in your child. You know when things are working for them and when things are not working for them. You are noticing how they're getting on at birthday parties when they're around other children. You're seeing how they are emotionally when you drop them off at school or when you pick them up. And you're the person who's with them day in and day out. But that also means that you're best placed to be able to support them with the progress that they can make and opening up that potential. If you can be upskilled in understanding what your child's needs are and how to help, then you can implement that into your daily life, because every interaction that you have with your child day in, day out is an opportunity to work on some of those developmental skills that are going to make a big difference. And that's part of why this podcast started, was because we wanted to be able to reach parents, upskill you with the knowledge and the tools that you need to be able to support your child to make that difference. So do be persistent. Make sure that your voice is heard by going back to those services and trying again. Absolutely, sometimes a little developmental concern or a little lag at a particular time doesn't necessarily mean that your child is going to need SEN support long term or that there's going to be a long term difficulty. But from my point of view, I don't see any harm or that anything is lost by supporting your child in the here and now to ease their frustration straight away, to put some really positive steps in place that are going to support your child through that little and often support, even if that really the biggest benefit to that is building your child's confidence. Those things are going to be useful. It's not a lost effort to think, okay, I'm noticing something developmentally that's kind of bringing some questions to the front of my mind. Taking some action is never going to be a waste of time. There are always things that we can be doing that will give our children that developmental boost and will help them to do better in their education, to encourage the building of social relationships, friendships, interactions with all of the people in school. None of that is ever lost time. It's a little bit like, you know, we'll hear people say things like, it's easier to lose 5 pounds than 5 stone, or, you know, it's easier to lose 1 kilo than 50 kilos. And that's true in children's development as well. When we notice something, if we can be really positive and proactive, that is the best opportunity that we have to give our kids that little boost, to get them on track, to build their confidence and equip them with the skills that they're going to need tomorrow, next term, and in their adult life. So those are kind of a little few things to think about, that if the school or nursery is raising a concern, or you as a parent are concerned about something, reach out, speak to others, and see what are the things that we can be doing to help our children today. I'm going to leave you with a little testimonial from Danielle, who I worked with a couple of years ago on getting her son an education, health and care plan and considering school options that might be appropriate for him.
Hi, my name is Danielle and I live in Surrey, and I just wanted to share a little bit of my story. I met Sarah about 5 years ago at the very start of our SEND journey. Like most other parents, I was naive about everything involved in getting help for my son and all the difficulties I would experience in getting him into the right school, and it was completely overwhelming, to say the least. Working with Sarah felt like I actually had someone fighting in my corner for the first time. It felt to me that this was more than a job for Sarah, and she was genuinely concerned about our family and my son. And without a doubt, if we did not have Sarah helping with the EHCP process, we would not have secured a place at the school where my son is now. Sarah taught me to trust in my instincts as a mom and to never stop fighting. Understanding and navigating this whole system and getting help and the right school for our children can be an absolute minefield. But Sarah managed to make everything clear and straightforward, and I will forever be grateful that we found her. My son is now thriving at school and progressing every day, and I have Sarah to thank for that.
You are welcome to send voice notes into the show to either ask questions for future podcast topic conversations, those sorts of things, or to comment on which episodes were useful for you and why. I would love to hear from you. I think it's great for our podcast listeners to not only hear my voice, but to hear from parents themselves. I mean, I'm a parent myself, but you know what I mean, from other parents, because we will bring together a whole range of different experiences and different points of view. And so we would love to showcase those on the podcast too. Thanks for listening, and I will see you in the next episode. Thank you so much for listening. It would mean so much to me if you would rate, review, and follow now. It will help other frazzled parents to find us and will give us a platform to bring in more guests. Tune in for the next episode when we will continue to navigate neurospicy family life. Bye for now.